Today on the Illini Choir Podcast, it's time to catch up with our guy, our All-American linebacker, Jay Lehman. It's been too long since we've caught up with Jay, but I figured now is a good time as we kind of get into a lull here with football and basketball, just to get Jay's thoughts on what this offseason was for Illinois football. And we really talk a lot about the big change at defensive coordinator, bringing in Bobby Hauk. Jay discusses why he thinks Brett Bielema made the change and what he thinks of the switch to a 3-3-5 defense, why he thinks it'd be good for Illinois, and some questions he has about that. We also break down a lot about the personnel. New quarterback, Caton Hauser. Jay gives his thoughts on him, the skill around him, the new look offensive line, some strengths of this roster and some concerns and some guys he's really excited to see on this Illinois football roster. So talked to Jay for almost 40 minutes about Illinois football. It was great to catch up and get his insight on all of that. But before we get to Jay, I want to address something that we announced last week that I've agreed to an extension, and Illini Choir has, with 24/7 Sports. We had some options during the last year or so, and we are very excited to stay with 24/7 Sports. It has been very supportive and huge behind our growth. We've been big fans of the network, and they have really valued us throughout our time there. So we're really appreciative of them. We appreciate Josh Harvey, Adam Stanko, everyone at 24/7 Sports for that. But I want to thank my staff for, in this business, to have options is rare. Right. And to have two good options or multiple good options is very rare. And I do not take that lightly. And a huge reason for that is my staff, Joy Wagner, Kyle Tosk, obviously Jay Lehman and Michael Tulip and everything they add on the podcast here. So without their hard work, we don't have those options. And I'm forever grateful for those guys and glad that I can reward them for being a part of that. But also got to thank you guys for that, because without your support, we are not having these options, right? So your support of what we do, how we do it, is very meaningful for so whether it's just watching these podcasts on YouTube or listening to these podcasts wherever you get them, but most importantly to the people who are our VIP members, thank you for that, because you're supporting journalism, you're supporting local coverage, which I do not take for granted in this world that is just Twitter posts and aggregation and AI and all of this. You are supporting original reporting, original writing analysis, and thank you for doing that and continue to do that, whether it's us or whoever, whether it's the news side, whether it's entertainment, sports. Support those people who are giving you original, unique perspective, analysis, reporting that is really rewarding, that people are still supporting this in a day and age where likes and retweets and all of that and, you know, interactions, because you can get some money on social media. Thank you for doing that. It is very, very meaningful to me. But we are excited to continue our relationship with 24/7 Sports and continue to grow Illini Inquirer. And I posted the other day, we are looking to hire at Illini Inquirer. So if you are a budding journalism, reporting, marketing, whatever it is, we're looking to grow this podcast especially. So anybody with the audio video side, if you have interest, email us at IlliniInquirer.com. This is hopefully a full-time job for somebody, probably an entry level. But even if you're not proficient in all the audio, visual, all that software, we're just looking for talented people that have a lot of passion and a great work ethic. So we are trying to grow this. And part of the reason the last couple weeks have been stressful is because, or the last couple months in this process, is because I want to continue growing this. And I have visions of what this thing can be, and adding somebody else would really help us do that. So if you have interest, email us at IlliniInquirer@gmail.com. We've gotten some great applicants already, and I'm excited to continue to grow this and continue to give you guys quality and more quantity of content covering your favorite teams. So looking forward to getting better ahead with 24/7 Sports. But after all of that, let's get to Jay Lehman, the part you guys really want to hear, which is Illinois football breakdown from Jay Lehman. He's coming up next on the Illini Inquirer Podcast. This episode of the Illini Inquirer Podcast is brought to you by Columbia Street Roastery. That weather is definitely getting hotter. Summer is almost here. But now's the time to go check out the cold brew cans at Columbia Street Roastery. You can get them in town. If you're in downtown Champaign, go check out Columbia Street Roastery there, or go to the Yard in Urbana. Great setup there. But even if you are out of town, you can get Columbia Street Roastery smooth, easy to drink, perfect on the go cold brew coffee cans. I love their nitro brew, so go in locally and check that out. But you can get these cans delivered to you straight at home. And you can get 10% off your first order at csrcoffee.com by using code Illini all the way at csrcoffee.com. You also get free shipping on orders over $45. And if you're iced tea fans in these hot summer months, try out their iced tea packets to make freshly brewed iced tea at home. They have everyone's favorite flavors. You can try out their Fiesta Mexicana. It's a sangria-like flavor with fruits of mango, lime, strawberry, orange, and peach, or just go with their traditional. It's a good, smooth, traditional black iced tea. So visit csrcoffee.com to get 10% off your first order with code Illini all the way, plus free shipping on orders over $45 at csrcoffee.com. All right, it's been a while since we caught up with our guy, Jay Lehman, our All-American linebacker. And while we haven't seen a lot of Illinois football on the field at all, there are things going on, and just a good time to catch up with Jay Lehman. How are you, buddy?
Doing great. Always a good time to talk football, especially in May.
Yeah, well, we didn't get to see hardly anything of spring ball, which makes
I do kind of feel like I'm in the dark. So before you text me and said, "Hey, man, I don't know if I'll be in midseason form, but we'll try the post-spring ball, you know, summer workout, Jay, here, and see if it actually works out for something."
Well, any kind of Jay is good on this podcast. So the biggest thing, Jay, is this was an offseason of change. We knew it was kind of bound to happen, right? With just the roster, how many seniors were here, but some was by choice with some of the coaching staff as well. So I'll just pose to you, what is the change that matters the most for Illinois football going into 2026?
Yeah, probably the defensive coordinator, but I want to zoom out first, and that is that we've been at this spot before for Illinois football, and that is what happens when the first coach that the coach that has his first recruiting class, rather, once they make it through, you know, I know it's different now with transfer class, it's a different thing. I wouldn't quite call that 2022 Brett's guys. Certainly had some of Brett's players, mostly Lovey guys that were the core of that football team. But you felt like last year the theme was we retained a lot of this kind of core class and we've got a chance to have a special season, which I would argue for the most part they did. There were some places where they came up short. But we've been at the spot before, whether it be after the, you know, 85 season of, you know, Illinois football where they had been to two or three straight bowl games, whether it had been with Makovic after his run of four and then he left, whether it's with Ron Turner after the Sugar Bowl season in year five. I believe this was just year five for Brett, right? So this would be year six, and that's when we started to see some cracks in Ron Turner's thing. With Zook, we really saw the cracks. His rise was quicker, you know, in year three, but we start to see some of the cracks in year four and five when he lost some players in some key games. So we've been at this spot before. And I think that's the big thing is, can Illinois sustain success? I know it's number one on Whitman's goals, and Brett has that front and center, and comes from programs who have made that shift, whether it be Iowa in the 80s, K-State in the 90s, Wisconsin in the 90s, and been mentored by that. So I think we have the right guy at the helm. But I do think that the most important shift after we zoom back in was the defense. We talk about some games that we felt like we just could not stop. And it'd be Washington really sticks out. Ohio State, you could say that stuck out for everybody, had a pretty darn good offense. But there were some games where we felt we could not get off the field, and or we were just trading scores and hoping that we scored last with, you know, Luke Altmyer being one of them. So Luke Altmyer being a guy that was clutch enough to score last. So I think the defense is the biggest shift.
So I want to get into the 3-3-5 with you, Jay. I'm interested in your thoughts on that style of defense. But let's just focus on Brett making this change, right? Like Aaron Henry finds a spot at Notre Dame, but it seemed like he was going to make a change here. And we talked all last fall about, is it time? Is it time to make a change? Why do you think Brett Bielema ultimately felt like he had to change his defense coordinator?
Well, one, I don't think the results on the field were good enough. I think that's the bottom line, is you're in a results-oriented business. I also think that from the time they got Aaron Henry to now, in the last 5 years, getting a coordinator has kind of changed. What are you looking for? You know, to say that we would have a coordinator with no real recruiting grounds in the Midwest has been really in the West, in the Mountain West area in Montana, and it's Bobby Houck, right?
Yeah.
I want to make sure I say his name right, because we'll be saying it a lot. But you would have never really got a coordinator who had no recruiting base in the area that you would recruit. That would be pretty rare, unless you were at a top level school like Ohio State, who was just bringing in, you know, basically mercenaries to be the best coordinator they could actually get. And because you needed people that recruited the areas, you know, Aaron Henry played at Wisconsin, so he had that Big Ten flavor. Also had great ties to Florida, where Illinois has had a lot of success getting Florida guys. I'm not saying those aren't important anymore, but I think in the age of NIL, it's coming down to more of an NFL mentality of who's the best coach that we can get, and then let's go pay and put packages together in the NIL world.
And the other thing, Jay, you can send Terry Hawthorne on the road recruiting now. You can send Pat Embleton and sure. Nate McNeil. You can send your recruiting staffers at Just Recruit, the personnel guys on the road now.
Well, that's a great point. Yeah. Usually it was, for years, it was, hey, I got a call from the linebacker coach at Illinois. And they would kind of work with you, whatever, or your region coach, whoever had your region. And then you kind of bump up to a coordinator, you know? And then you'd come on a visit, and you would a junior day, and you'd meet the head coach. And then if they really wanted you to do an in-home visit with the head coach, and that's kind of what had been the protocol. Now it's completely different. So I think the world shifted, and maybe Aaron Henry's ties of recruiting and players weren't as powerful as they necessarily were when he was first hired. Okay, not saying they're not valuable. And then number three, I think fundamentally, they saw some things from what was a Ryan Walters defense that I think was truly unique and dynamic when it was created that had been solved by a number of coordinators. And this happened with Ron Zook. You know, Ron Zook had a defense that was pretty unique in what he brought from Florida to Illinois, but soon after 3 or 4 years of playing the same opponents and a lot of film, you kind of get it figured out, and you had to make a change with Vic Koning and different things. And that's what I think Brett saw. I think he also saw that if I can't go and get the biggest, baddest front seven players in the country, which, let's be honest, even with NIL, we're still not getting those marquee front seven players. You could make an argument that Grant Bierman was that. You make an argument that Gabe Backus developed into that, or Bierman was that in high school, or that Gabe Backus developed into it. But if you look at who's getting what, top-tier Reuben Bain Jr.-type players, it's not Illinois. So if we're not going to do that, who are teams that didn't have those players but had success, and what kind of scheme did they have? Now, I know Illinois fans are probably tired of hearing Indiana, but Indiana will be one of those teams that relied a lot on disguise, stunting, and looking what I would call symmetrical to the quarterback, meaning that the sides, you don't really know, this isn't overloaded, where is the pressure coming from? And I think he said, okay, if we're able to be a developmental program, we're able to recruit, it seems historically, more DBs that make it in the NFL than, especially the last 4 or 5 years, and the back seven better than we have the front, what can we do to set up our front successfully with disguise, using athleticism, and develop these players, and then put more of our best players on the field? So if half of your top 12 defenders are defensive backs, well, I want them on the field rather than just like four defensive backs. So I think it allows you to, one, disguise more, two, play with more stunts and try to create more negative plays, something we really struggle with in getting negative plays. And then number three, with the roster they've built and the players that they're able to get this year, next year, and the year after that, what allows most of them to get on the field? And I think those are the three things that really led to a shift. Aaron Henry would still be here if we were, you know, a top 30 defense. There's no doubt in my mind. It just wasn't the case. And ultimately, I think the defense probably cost this team a playoff, at least in one of the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So that's the reality. And to make that jump, we had to make a shift.
You know me, Jay. I love aggressive defense. I like muddying the picture for quarterbacks, but also putting them under pressure, throwing into tight windows. This defense, as Bobby Houck says, it's to put offenses on their back foot, put quarterbacks on their back foot. That's exciting, but not a lot of teams run the 3-3-5, and I would imagine there's a reason for that, probably because they're a little lighter in the box. So what do you make of this? What does Illinois have to do to be successful with this defense now in the first time for the Big Ten? I know Tony White ran it pretty successfully with Nebraska for a couple years, but this hasn't been in the league, which is part of the reason Brett wants to do it. But what's the key to being successful with this defense?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, one thing that Brett talked about, especially in the old Big Ten West days, is that a lot of people had the same defensive prep when you looked at them, other than Wisconsin when they had a role under Jim Leonard, and also you obviously always had great defenses at Iowa, but it was all kind of the same principles when Fitz was at Northwestern, and you looked at some of these different teams, Minnesota, it was all kind of same principles, and that you could have some carryover week to week. Okay, well, they did this kind of like this, and it's kind of similar, but it's a little bit different. And what was so unique about Illinois defense, when it first came out, it was totally unique within the Big Ten West, which made it difficult, right? And so I think they're getting kind of back to that with a 3-3-5. It is unique. 3-3-5 has actually been around for longer than people think. I mean, Rich Rod ran this at West Virginia. I mean, that's 20 years ago, I know. I know he's known as an offensive guy, but it's been around longer than you think.
Yeah, Joey Dunn started really in the early 90s, I believe.
They've got a lot of history on it, and I think – people don't realize the transitions of everything. So in the 80s, I'll go through some football history here. In the 80s, it was a lot of 3-4 defenses, right? Dick LeBeau kind of Steelers, this is the defense you want to run. West Coast came out with short passes that really, really exposed some of the 3-4, and the 49ers and what they did kind of led to the 4-3, which was kind of the era that I was in. Nick Saban came back, brought the 3-4 defense, and the Patriots did a lot of 3-4 defense, and success leaves clues. What they were finding, though, is, yeah, I want to do this, but, man, it takes – you got to get a really good nose tackle and a great 5 technique, which we had in Johnny Newton, and some really good edge players to really be good at that. And I think the scheme is sound, but if I can't put players into that scheme and give them the best chance to be successful, it's really difficult, right? And especially with the quarterback run, which is such an issue, the 3-4 lets you do that. But that edge is always in a bind on that, because it's like either you got the big run stopper edge who is more of a guy, or you got then a speed edge who can kind of tackle the quarterback, but it's still difficult. What I like about the 3-3-5 is it creates confusion for quarterbacks in college who are not as skilled as pros. It's number two, it's going to create chaos and create negative plays. And number three is it's going to put more team speed on the field, and also is going to help you with the quarterback scramble and run, which if a quarterback's mobile, we've seen this, will get you 3-5 big first downs a game. Luke Altmaier probably had 2 or 3 a game. And so it does those things. How it's actually going to play out with our personnel, I really have no clue. I really don't. But I do know that they're going to get the best 12 guys on the field, and I feel like they think they're deeper in the defensive backfield than probably the front seven.
So of the personnel you know, Jay, who's this good for?
Well, I think Xavier Scott's a big key to it. I think that. I think Juice Clark, it's a big thing. I think Matthew Bailey's could have a great year. I also think that guys like Grant Bierman, rangy guys, could be really good. I think Joe Barna, you're like, well, what's Joe Barna's position? I think Joe Barna's strong enough you could move him on the line, but you can play him off the line. So I think if you are a quicker, more undersized defensive lineman, it probably is better than playing at 3-4 where you got to be Johnny Newton just to beast people, right? Not that you have to be Johnny Newton, but it certainly helps. So I think if you're accustomed to stunning, to using your hands and getting upfield and trying to make disruptive plays, I think that's going to benefit. I don't think we're going to have – gosh, who did the Bears have back in the day? It was like the two tackles that they had that were just
Ted giant. Washington and Keith
Ted Trailer. Ted Washington and somebody else.
Keith Trailer, yeah.
Yeah, Keith Trailer. I mean, those guys were just – I don't think you're – and those guys are hard to find, and we can never get those guys. So I think you're going to see more movement and whatnot, and you're going to see more stunting, more slanting from the line. That does open you up to some big plays. But rather than death of a thousand paper cuts, it's probably going to be like, okay, there's a big play. They scored. We got to respond. Or we created a negative play, got them in third and long, got a turnover. I think that's what Brett has said. You know what? I've really got to do that, because there was times he could not really execute the offense he wanted to because he was running out of clock because he couldn't get his offense back on the field. Yeah. I think that's an issue.
Are you excited that linebackers become more important again?
Oh, man, here's the thing. Linebackers are getting squeezed. You know, back in the day, it was the base defense played the most, and it was three linebackers. Then they started doing more nickel when the spread came over up in 2000. You had two linebackers in, and you hated to be that Sam linebacker because the Sam linebacker gets switched out for the nickel.
Yeah.
And unless you're a really, really unique Sam linebacker. And then a lot of times, someone would run one linebacker. And some of the six DBs, five DBs, because they were probably more talented at those positions. They had some injuries at linebacker. Rosiak was banged up. We know that. Kreutz has been banged up at times. And Bierman was really young. And Kenan Odaluga was more of a specialist role package guy. So, yeah, I think it's better for the linebackers. I do. As far as what I see them playing. That doesn't mean that we couldn't see Matthew Bailey at a linebacker position. We could see Xavier Scott in the right package at a linebacker position and maybe have more defensive backs in the game. So we have absolutely no idea. And so that's why UAB is going to be very, very interesting on what happens. It's almost like you wish you played Duke first rather than UAB so you didn't have to show all that stuff.
Yeah, like I keep talking about with the linebackers, like, hey, I think this is more interesting, but I have no idea the exact personnel they will use. Like Daniel Brown all of a sudden becomes really important. Ish Conte becomes really important. Like you mentioned, Xavier, like Nick Hankins, a freshman who's really built, Jay, kind of comes in looking like Vontae Davis. That's a guy that you could see at the second level of the defense at some point. That's what fascinates me so much when we get to see this unveiled a little bit in September.
Yeah, and a little I've heard good things about Hankins. I know it's a guy they really, really battled for recruiting-wise, and you would know that more. But I also do think that Daniel Brown is a guy that, when healthy, has showed flashes and has the size, but more importantly, has the burst. He's a guy I feel like can be really slippery, certainly doesn't have the power that Gabe Akers does, who really does off the edge. But I think he could make some plays. Well, Ish Conte is a guy they were excited about getting out of JUCO. Are some of these JUCO guys, after they have a year or two of the program, really going to flourish? I think that's a big question.
Guys, I'm pushing 40. I've noticed the older I get, the less forgiving even a couple drinks can be the next morning. You feel like you're responsible. You have a couple beers. You get home at a reasonable time, drink some water, eat some food. You do everything right, yet you still wake up feeling kind of off the next day. Foggy, low energy, not fully yourself. That's why I tried Cheers Restore. And honestly, I was skeptical at first, but the difference the next morning really surprised me. I slept better, woke up feeling way more normal, and actually felt productive the next day instead of dragging through the morning. This is Cheers Restore after alcohol aid. You take it up after your last drink or before bed, and it works while you sleep. Cheers says you wake up feeling at least 50% better or your money back. It helps your body metabolize alcohol more efficiently and supports liver health with ingredients like DHM and cysteine. Cheers is backed by doctors, PhDs, and over 1,000 verified clinicians. They've sold over 50 million doses. It's available at Target, CVS, and Walgreens. But take Cheers Restore after your last drink or before bed and wake up feeling at least 50% off better or your money back. For a limited time, listeners are getting 20% off their order by using code ALINI at cheershealth.com. Just head to cheershealth.com and use code ALINI for 20% off. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them ALINI Inquirer sent you. All right, let's go to the offensive side of the ball here, Jay. Caden Hauser comes in. Illinois does go into the portal and gets a pretty highly touted quarterback, had success at ECU, has played in the Big Ten at Michigan State. What do you think about him coming into what is the fifth year of Barry Lunney Jr.? Maybe one of the bigger stories is keeping Barry Lunney for another year, potentially more with his extension and raise. But what do you think about them going to get Hauser and fitting into that offense?
Well, number one, in looking what the disaster has been at Texas Tech with Sorsby, I'm just glad that – but never take for granted the guy is eligible. I know the gambling thing is crazy, but like – so much stuff can happen in football. Oh, you know, we made a mistake on his eligibility or this happened or he gets hurt. I love that we have a healthy quarterback who's got some real legit game experience in the Power Four and in the Group of Five. And I'm not really judging. I mean, I think it's really, really hard to judge him on his Power Four experience because he's a different player. I know I played way too early. He looked like he played too early on a bad team, and I've been there. And it's really hard. It's really hard to look good when you play too early on a bad team. Some of the worst film I ever put out was that. So I'm excited about him. I'm excited they got their guy. It seems like a fit. And what I'm excited about too is Barry Lunny. Last year, I don't think there was a corner that had been there 4 years in a row offensively in Illinois. So there's certainly that guy that's been there 5 years in a row. And to really retain him, I was kind of shocked that, and we don't know how many inquiries that there are about a guy, right?
He's had them. He's had them for sure. Like Group of Five.
Right? Yeah. I do think it's almost unfair to some of the coordinators that aren't at top level. I'm not talking Will Steins or whatever. I'm talking, and we're not a top tier program yet. So we're certainly ascending. I would say we're in that top 30 discussion for sure. Right now, over the last couple of years, it's just hard in this win now mentality of, okay, if you're a coordinator, what players can you bring out of the portal? What can you do this? And I feel like maybe he's kind of been a victim of that or whatnot, but he seems to be like, hey, I'm here. And he has not only the offense has improved, but we've seen him be a developer of talent, especially at the quarterback position. So he's been really creative. He's one of the more creative coordinators that we've had. You know, took some flack, I think, that first year of maybe being too Chase Brown-centric or having trouble in the red zone. I don't think that's been an issue since then. Really, since Luke Altmaier got here, he spread the wealth around and really developed Luke Altmaier into the player that he is today and will be. So I'm excited about Hauser. I'm excited that Lenny's there. But I'm excited about the weapons that they have around him. I think they've got a top third kind of skill set around them. Is there one game breaker out there? Maybe Khalil Valentine. Could Colin Dixon take a leap like Pat Bryant did his, you know, third and fourth year? Yes, possibly. Do I like some of the pieces receiver-wise that they brought into the portal? Yeah, I like all of that. I'm talking a lot about all of that hinges on the offensive line, which I think there's a lot of big questions about. So that's kind of the preview. Now ask me about something specific because I keep going.
I was going to ask you because, you know, I go on other podcasts and they ask me about what Caden Hauser has around him. And I say, I don't know if there's a top 100 draft pick at wide receiver or running back or tight end. And we'll get into a new piece of tight end. But I said, these are a lot of players that are going to have a chance to play in the NFL. Like, yeah. Aiden Wofford's productive when he's on the field. And Khalil Valentine, we saw take a leap and we think could take another one. And Colin Dixon and Hudson Clement are proven starters. And then you add Jay Sean Platt, who, out of all the guys, Jay, seemed to get more buzz than any of the newcomers during spring. Alex Perry, you add to the mix. They're really excited about Braden Trimble. Why are you high on that group that you know, those guys who are returning could potentially take another step?
Well, number one, I've seen Colin Dixon just take a step every year, and he's been consistent. So I think that trend's going to continue. I think he should be option one. I mean, from what I've seen, I haven't seen any of the new guys, Platt, anybody. So like, I certainly that can change. Khalil Valentine, we've seen him improve. I really have liked Aiden Loffrey when healthy and on the field. And honestly, Caden Fagan moving the tight end is great. For a number of reasons. One, I think it's a better position naturally for him. He's a good pass catcher. But three was a crowd in that backfield to get what you really wanted. It's the reason they lost Josh McCray, because four was definitely a crowd. And I think you're going to get more rhythm out of those two. I do think Jordan Anderson will be a short yardage specialist, which he's done phenomenal at. I think on third and ones, he's done great. I think he could be pass rush a pass protector as well. So I think you're really solid at the running back position. You feel like you got, as my good buddy Glenn Mason would say, a pair and a spare in there. Some of those guys I know, can't remember the guy out of Jersey, or there's another running back, you could know his name.
John Forster.
I think there's some guys too that we haven't heard about and haven't had a chance to see that could plug and play some too. Receiver-wise, I'm hoping they have the rhythm. They've got rhythm with Caden Hauser, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the ball get out quicker than maybe we've seen it out in the past.
They're excited about that because it is one area Luke was not great at, right? Yeah, Luke is an all-time quarterback here. He didn't help the offensive line certain times, and they do talk about his quick release and Caton get the ball out quickly, that could be a big boost.
And I've watched very little tape. I did watch some East Carolina stuff. One, I saw the ball out quick, great release. I had a chance to play against Aaron Rodgers, Cal versus Illinois, and I'm not sure it's Aaron Rodgers, you know, quick release, but it is a good release, and I think they're going to help this offensive line more than maybe they helped them in the past game before. And I think we're going to see, and we're seeing this more and more, they call it free access routes. We see Ole Miss do this a lot. Who's ever open on the free access, I mean, if they're going to leave a 6-yard hitch open, bang, we're going to hit it. If they're going to leave a 5-yard out open to the tight end, bang, we're going to hit it, and we're just going to go. And I think we're going to see more of that because I think I'm not sure this offensive line can hold up on two on heavy play action or even max protection where we have, you know, two receivers going out and it's a play action and we got 3-4 second routes, double moves to make it happen. I think we're going to see more of that. And again, I also think they're going to get the backs involved in the passing game a little bit more as well. So in that short game. So that's kind of what I would think. And I think we're going to see more 4-receiver sets. Now, will it be out of 10 personnel? I don't know. Probably out of 11 personnel. Maybe even out of 12 personnel. We get Aiden Loffrey, Khalil Ballantyne, and Caden Fagan on the field all together, but in different positions. So I think the biggest change we'll see is that ball is going to be out quicker based on Hauser's skill set and the inexperience of the offensive line.
Fagan at tight end, you mentioned it, getting Fagan on the field with Loffrey, getting him on the field with Ballantyne. It's like those are two of the better playmakers on this entire roster. But this is a new position, and blocking becomes way more important. Like Christian Abney, I still think is going to get the most reps because that's a guy who can be a wide tight end and block.
Sure.
What are your expectations for Caden Fagan in his first year at this new position?
Well, one, I think he's going to play more what I would call H.
Yes.
Which is kind of a hybrid between fullback and tight end. Northwestern used to call Dan Vitale was a good tight end there. He was a super back and kind of similar to that, where I see him being an excellent, maybe a puller, kind of pulling around into a hole. But you're not going to see the hardest thing for a running back or receiver to do is create good inline blocking. The reason Tip Ryman is in the NFL is because he's a good inline blocker, right? I mean, he could serviceable as a catching the ball and whatnot, but inline blocking, it's why George Kittle is the most, when healthy, it's like a cheat code for Christian McCaffrey and the 49ers. They literally get an extra offensive lineman on the field because he can one-on-one block an NFL defensive end. And I think that's going to be the issue. I think Christian Abney can hold up, but can he hold up in inline blocking? They won't make him do that much, probably as an H and whatnot. I also wouldn't be surprised that they mess with personnels, and every once in a while, it's like, man, they're coming out in O2 personnel, which is like, you know, 0 backs and 2 tight ends, and he moves from H back to tailback and gets a couple carries, right? Because it messes with your personnel numbers and different things.
I'm just fascinated how Barry's going to use him because that's a fun tool. Right. That's a fun piece to play with.
Like, well, Ballantyne or Loffrey aren't even in the game, so they're not going to run the ball. Oh, wait, now they're bringing back Fagan. So now they are going to run the game. So I think you can mix and match. I think it depends on the trust that Hauser has with him in the passing game. And I know he's shown good receiving skills on, you know, dump passes and screen plays. He seems to have a little a knack when he's in space to get yards after the catch. So I'm excited about it. And hopefully he can stay healthy. I think here's a guy that running back was brutal on his body. And we saw that. And I'm hoping he can remain as healthy as he did last year, maybe more healthy because he's not taking as many hits.
As you said, the biggest question mark for me on this offense is the offensive line. And it was experienced yet inconsistent the last couple years. Now you kind of expect inconsistency, but Jay, they're bigger, they're more athletic. It's just a lot of unproven. Like Christian Martin has every tool you want in a left tackle, maybe besides the strongest anchor, but he's unproven at this level. Mike Amadola was the number one JUCO guard. They had Jake Renfro, who's very effective center, bigger than Josh Kreutz, but is injured all the time. So now you have Brandon Henderson returning as a starter, Nathan Knappick after a good bowl game. Now he's got to show he can do it week after week after week. What are your expectations for this
group? I like Knappick in the bowl game. I thought he played well against some really – and I know the number one edge for Tennessee was out. We had some guys out too, but he played well in the bowl game, at least holding up on the pass blocking. Who do you – I know McMillan played one game, I think, against Purdue at center for Kreutz, did well. Is it projected that McMillan or Renfro would play center?
I think Renfro. By the way, Caden Hauser took Renfro and Colin Dixon and Braden Trimble. And I think
it was to California.
Alex Perry to California for a week. So you like to see that, but I think that says Renfro. I think McMillan's their sixth offensive lineman, Jay, where he's their backup center, which they're going to probably need at some point with Renfro's injury history. And then I think he's probably their back left guard.
I think a guy that can swing all different positions and whatnot. It has felt like, and Geske at times was that mauler to get push in there, but not since really Isaiah Adams have we had a guy that just blew guys off the, and Isaiah unfortunately had to go play tackle. He was kind of a more natural guard, but and maybe I'm going to mess his name up. The JUCO Madalau,
yeah.
Maybe he can be that guy. They need interior push on third and two when everybody knows you're running the football. And they that's something they've struggled with. They've struggled with interior push. They've actually been decent on getting to the second level. It's been blocking the first level that has been an issue. And so can they get that push and whatnot? But I really believe, again, I think we're going to pass this up the run. We did that to some sort, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Caden Hauser throw the ball 30 to 40 times a game, where Luke, if you look at him, was a lot of times 20 to 25 times a game. Now you say, well, I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know if that's going to be good. There's a couple things that have to happen. Number one, some of those passes are just an extension of the run game. Swing passes, quick, out. So they're high percentage screen plays and whatnot. And number two is I think they're realizing they have to make the most out of all their possessions. And then Barry knows this. You can't afford to start slow if you don't have a dominant defense. And I think they're not to say that Barry wasn't aggressive or whatnot in the first quarter of different things, but I think you're going to see passing to set up the run, and I think you're going to see a defense that, hey, we're going to get 1 to 2 turnovers a game. That's our goal. We're going to give up some big plays too, but we're not going to get. It's not going to be 15 play drives for 8 minutes that keep our offense off the field, and then it's like, okay, offense gets complacent. So I think it's going to look different.
Yeah.
Brett Bielema is never going to abandon the run. Barry Lenny's never going to, and you shouldn't, because you got talent and you've got more size on the offensive line. I think where the run game comes in is you get a lead and then you squeeze them with some of that run game that you do, and can you impose your will? So, but I see us being more of an air out. If I could explain it a little bit, I'm thinking a little bit more John Paddock-ish Barry Lenny offense than a Luke Altmyer, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So give me one or two players, Jay, that you're really excited to see or I think are really key for next year. I mean, outside the obvious, like Caden Hauser, Xavier Scott, Matthew Bailey. Is there a player or two that you're just
One, I think Juice Clark has a chance to be a high draft pick.
I agree.
You just don't have the length and explosiveness like he does. It's rare. At that corner position, and listen, you're usually on a football team, you're gonna put your best corner at the boundary corner or nickel, compared to where you, depends on what the team is, and then your second best corner usually goes to nickel, or your best safety goes to nickel, and I think that's what they have. They have Juice Clark at probably your boundary corner, and the reason, just so people understand, I know most people understand this, but the boundary corner is the closest to the quarterback, so you have less reaction time to make a play on the ball. The field corner, especially on a college field where the hash marks are wider than the NFL, you have much more time to react. A lot of times you'll have a 8-10 yard cushion with a field corner right? And so I think Juice Clark's the guy that I think is going to be really good. We know about Matthew Bailey. I think they're critical, Barna and Daniel Brown. I think those two are critical in, can we get pass rush? That's critical defensively. And then three is, I really believe that Aiden Loughery or Khalil Valentine, they both have an opportunity to be 1,000-yard back if they were just, I really do. So one of those is really, really intriguing to me. And then I am intrigued by Brandon Henderson. Here's a guy that really has a lot of tools that I feel like, whether, and this is me speculating, whether it's been maybe just off the field stuff or workout stuff, that maybe he didn't have the full trust of the coaches at some point. Sometimes he was taken out quicker than others, and I'm speculating there. But I think he has the talent and the ability to be a really, really good football player. And if he can be rock solid in one of those positions, I think it'd be a guard position, or maybe he played tackle at one point. Could he do that? I don't know if he's been passed up with some of the new guys, but I believe that he has the chance to be one of those guys.
I think he's solidified at right guard, and I agree with you, Jay. We talk about the offensive line. The one returning starter's got to take a step forward because he's been a solid starter, but right. Can he be a good to great starter? I think it's a huge year for
– And I think he's got the talent. He's got the strength. He's got the footwork. He's a guy that's graduated already. He's been in the program. He's a guy that's got to play really good week in and week out for you, and I think he has the ability to do it.
And if 5 for 5 passes, it's a guy who could have 2 more years of eligibility too, because he's a true senior right now. So yeah, okay. That would be huge for him.
Has 5 for 5 actually passed? We've talked about it for
no, but long. It will. It sounds like it certainly will. Jay, before I let you go, I just want to, zooming out, big picture, this 2026 season. I don't think anyone thinks this is the year that they go to the college football playoff, right? Now that could expand here in a couple weeks and down the road here, but for 2026, what's this year mean for the program? What does Illinois need to accomplish?
Well, I people get tired of us talking about it. Really, it's that, can he sustain with a whole nother crop of players that he's brought in? And I don't think anybody in the country would argue that Brett Bielema, with the resources he's had and the position of Illinois football, where it was at and where it's at now in the current NIL era, has not won one of the best bargains and ROIs you could find in a head coach. I think he's in a top five discussion out there for what he's brought with the challenges that he needs. But he will be tested this year, I think, more than anything, on, did you hire the right guy defensively? We think so. We haven't seen anybody play yet in the Big Ten. So we think so. Yeah, we can give them benefit of doubt. Did you do enough to replace all the guys that you lost, not only graduation, but in the portal and whatnot? Did you do enough? And I know you didn't have unlimited resources, but did you do enough? And I think number three is, can we have, this is the biggest one, a winning record? Can you come back after you lose all these guys and be 7-5 with a 9 conference game schedule and a Power 5 opponent in Duke, who's been a solid team, who was, dare I say, the defending ACC champion, right? I know that was kind of, but you have 6 games you're probably favored to win, 3 you're toss up, and 3 you're probably, it'd be tough to win those games. It's been my experience that you usually split your toss ups, so 2 out of 3, 1 out of 3. You lose one game you're not supposed to lose, and you win one game you're not supposed to win. You know, Lou Henson used to say, a third of your games, you're better than the team. You play better than you're supposed to. A third of the games, you play worse than you're supposed to. And a third of the games, you play like you should. That's probably how this lines up. And if you do just that math, I see 7-8 wins on the horizon with a Brett Bielema football team. They should be in that locker room, though. They should be saying, we want to be Big Ten champs.
Yeah,
I think objectively, as an outsider, I'll look what other teams have and whatnot. I think 7 or 8 wins seems like a really good season. Even if you got to 6 wins and got to the postseason, it's like, that's understandable with everything that they had lost.
Jay Layman, you're the goods, man. We appreciate it. We'll catch up down the line. I know there's a lot more going on in college football that we'll catch up about at some point. Jay, you're the goods, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right, great stuff from Jay Layman. Always appreciate his time. We'll catch up with him down the line. We'll have reaction to Andrei Stoyakovich's decision whenever that comes out. Isaac Trotter is going to join us on Thursday morning, and we'll have reaction to all the stay or go decisions in the NBA, how it impacts the Big Ten, what he thinks about where the Illini kind of rank in this Big Ten, and how Stoyakovich, if he returns, can get better. So we will talk about all of that tomorrow. Later in the week, we're going to catch up with Scott Docterman from The Athletic about all the big news happening in college football, 2014 playoff, pay for play. Are we actually going to have some legislation in college football to kind of give us guardrails? We'll talk about it all with Scott Docterman later on in the week. But we appreciate you guys for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcast. Check us out on YouTube. Hit that like button, subscribe, and hit the notifications bell wherever you are. If you're not a VIP member, $1 to sign up for your first month or 50% off for your first year. Go check us out there at IlliniInquirer.com. But for Jay Layman, I'm Jeremy Warner. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. And we'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.